Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
You guys keep talking about, you know, building depth, but at the end of the day, you still need that dude. Where are you guys going to find that dude?
You know, there's other players in this building on this team who, if they continue to develop, continue to work on a daily basis, they may get there. And we have the resources in place, the coaching staff, player development to support that.
That was Mark Eversley, the Bulls general manager.
Get your super serum ready. We're going to inject that dude that we already have in our development. And he's going to be like Captain America, Steve Rogers style. Except for probably not.
A man we can discuss that with, Marshall, is joining us right now on the Circle Resort and Casino Hotline. CircleLasVegas.com. He's a friend of the show. It's always nice to hear him. Mark Deeks. Mark Deeks is at Mark Deeks NBA. He's a basketball scout and writer and is an NBA cap analyst. And typically, I would want to start with talking about the Bulls themselves. But Mark, this is July 1st. We've already seen a lot of crazy deals happen earlier today. One of the most notable being the Bucks going after the Bucks waiving Damian Lillard and making a lot of moves there, extending certain players. They're going after others. How do you evaluate just what they were able to do with Damian Lillard to free up money to get Miles Turner?
It's completely unfathomable, isn't it? We're now in a world where Damian Lillard is being waived and stretched. Luka Doncic is a Laker. What is the point, guys, of making any predictions when this is the league today and compared to 6 months ago? It is crazy. I can't imagine anybody saw this coming. I say that from the media side, the fan side, but also, as far as I'm aware, no one in the league really anticipated this. I'm sure there were some, but it's news to me. It is a dumbfounding move, but not in a bad way. I compare it, I think, to Denver with their moves that they made, quote-unquote, yesterday, when they traded Michael Porter for Cam Johnson. And they broke through the concrete that they had built up. They got stuck in this salary cap quagmire where they had lots of payroll on the books. And it's not about whether they can afford to cut the checks. They can. It's about what that restricts you from doing going forwards. Denver was stuck. Milwaukee was stuck. Boston were stuck. These teams have all taken drastic measures. None more drastic, I would say, than waiving Damian Lillard. Wow. Of course, he's injured, but who saw that coming? You invest your future, every single tradable asset you've got, into this man, and then you waive him? It's a staggering move, but I don't hate it. They're doing something drastic because they're in a drastic position. They have to keep Giannis. They couldn't get better. They can't do this with minimum salary Gary Trent signings. They have to try something. So fair play to them for trying, as long as they haven't annoyed Giannis.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Keep Giannis happy, keep Giannis here, and build around him, especially in an Eastern Conference that appears to have a very soft ceiling when we're talking about 2025-26 season. Meanwhile, there's the Bulls, who are mired in mediocrity, to say the least. I'm curious as to your thoughts on the Bulls' approach right about now, and if anyone is in a worse situation than the Bulls are heading into this offseason.
The two different answers to your two different questions there. Are there teams in a worse situation? Yes. Are the Bulls doing the right thing? No. Things aren't dreadful. Let's not look at Charlotte, for example, where they've been for so long. The Bulls are a playing team. It's not good enough, but it's not dreadful. But where's it going? That is the question. That has long been the question. They are not taking the bottoming out route that is customary, not mandatory, but customary within team building. They're not prioritizing getting back draft assets in the players that they do trade. I believe they've got one in total for the quartet of Caruso, Levine, DeRozan, and whoever it is, I've forgotten. I believe they got one draft pick back out of those four trades.
It was their own, though. That's the problem.
Oh, Lonzo.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was Lonzo as the fourth, yes.
There you go, Lonzo. Thank you. Now, they've got Josh Giddey in the process of that, but that's, again, we're assuming he will resign. I am assuming he will resign. That's fine. Is Josh Giddey your man? No. Is Kobe White your man? No. Patrick Williams isn't. We know that. Where's the foundational piece? The Bulls have been open about trying to build with this 8 or 9 good player scenario. Toronto did it a few years ago. Fine in theory, but they are so far short of that. Look at Toronto's bench when they were doing that. They had Fred VanVleet, all-star. Norman Powell nearly was. OG Anunoby, that's beyond the Siakam, Kyle Lowry in his prime, Kawhi Leonard, top of the shop. They are so far short of that. And the only way they're going to get there is to land about 6 or 7 winning lottery tickets, and without having that many to work with. They don't have assets. They don't have upside. They have some decent players, but even when they trade them, they're not getting a lot back for them. No offense, Isaac Okoro, he's not moving the needle at all. So I don't like where it's going, because I don't think it's going anywhere.
Well, that's the point, though, Mark, is you said yes to one answer and no to the other as far as being dreadful, because the answer was where they are and that they have no vision going forward. I would say they are in the most dreadful situation, because nothing is going to change as these front office people got extensions. There's no pressure to change the way that they are doing business.
I would also just like to point out the way he says dreadful, Marshall, versus the way Mark says dreadful. It's so much better coming across the Atlantic.
Well, thank you very much. If it wasn't for this accent, I'd have had a very different career. So thank you. I'm dining out on the novelty of being the Englishman. It's landed me... it's done all right for me so far, so I'm going to keep going with it. Any other English phrases you want, let me know. I'm your man. I do agree with you, though, broadly, on the point about how there is a lack of reason for optimism, I guess, lack of hope. There are worse situations. I come back to Charlotte again, because they've been considerably worse for a lot longer. The balls are more sort of mediocre, meh, if you will. They are not... For a franchise so storied and with such a market share and such legacy, they should be doing more than this. There is a lack of ambition, I think, that defines it. However, let's say there is one or two good trades in the pipeline. We could be looking at a 50-win team. A 50-win team with enough, particularly in the form of Noah Asenga, who was a good pick, to be able to build on top of that and get somewhere. I don't see much reason, given what they've done over the last couple of seasons, to assume that will happen, but it is possible if they are selectively aggressive, just as Indiana were when they targeted Pascal Siakam. Indiana, despite having a very different budget and very different potential if they chose to use it, chose a similar team building strategy of never bottoming out, never going the whole Philadelphia 76ers process or Oklahoma City Thunder style of getting every single pick possible, of staying in that mid-range and hoping to strike gold. They did so with Siakam, and they really did so with Tyrese Halliburton. It is a huge ask for the Bulls to do the same. It requires a level of foresight and personal development and asset management that we haven't seen from them. But if they can strike gold, they're going to get away with it. So hope for that.
Well, I also think, Mark, and we're talking to our friend Mark Deeks, who says dreadful way better because he's British. The accent's just cooler. It just is. Yeah, you know that. We know that. He's a basketball operations analyst and NBA salary cap expert. You can check out his work on heavy.com and hoopshype.com. And I also think that, I said this earlier in the show, I feel like the Bulls have maybe voluntarily somewhat, when you look at how creative teams are getting with some of these deals, because they don't have a lot of draft picks to move in addition to something else, they may have painted themselves into a corner when you consider the financial commitment that they made to Patrick Williams, even though it's, relatively speaking, team-friendly, and to Nikola Vucevic. You know, what are your thoughts on those two contracts kind of putting them in this scenario?
Yes, I have to agree with you. Patrick Williams has not lived up to the money and doesn't look like he's going to. Vucevic, you've got some resale value there, but it's very little. I think in reality, it'll be at best a sideways move. I think they should look to do that with Vucevic in particular. In the case of Williams, I think you ride this one out at least until the next deadline, possibly until next summer. He has to grow substantially for this to have any ambitions of working as an era of Bulls basketball, if you will. And the fact that the growth rate has been so very slow on both ends of the court means any dream of getting a Siakam type just isn't possible. You're barely looking at an NBA caliber starter, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean that looking at the numbers and the comparisons to those around him. So it's possible for you to fit Siakam into that 8 or 9, I believe it was, that Castanova said was the crux of their dream of having 8 or 9 good players. It's possible that he can be one of them, but he can't be, as we look at it today, one of the top 4 or 5 that is required. He's not paid like it, admittedly, but he's not paid a favourable contract. It just makes another net negative, or at the very least net neutral asset on a team with too many of those. I think you have to wait it out for now, give him a chance to rebuild his value, potentially kick on as a player, but there's urgency there, or otherwise it's a lost pick.
That word you used, urgency, I've heard it before, but I just haven't seen it exhibited in this city as far as the front office of a professional basketball team in quite some time. Mark, looking at this year and what you see the Bulls' potential being? We were asking ourselves, what's the ceiling for this Bulls group as it is, knowing that Nikola Vucevic may very well likely finish out his contract in Chicago, knowing that Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu could very well be Bulls for the rest of the season. What do you see the ceiling being for this team?
45 wins, pretty much as constructed. That assumes Josh Giddey's coming back. 45 is probably your top. I'm not saying that's likely. I think you're probably more likely to have 35, but 45 is your top. They will be in the playoff picture barring injury-related disaster. You can't legislate for the injuries. We might look silly if they end up winning 25 if they get serious injuries, but injuries will happen to someone, possibly them, fine. But that 35 to 45 win range, they are still in. They haven't got worse here. They haven't got better, fine, but they haven't got worse. The LaVine DeRozan team peaked. There was enough in the second half of last season with the Zach Collins, Trey Jones acquisitions, etc., to be able to at least sustain. I don't see growth potential. I don't see urgency, as you say, Marshall. That's the word that's not used with regards to this team. It can't be. I don't see those things, and you need to see those things for a prognosis. They will, however, probably stay at a level, plateau perhaps. If that's not enough, but it will put them in that 40 wins, 8 to 10th seed, one good trade, maybe they're up to 6th range. It's better than it used to be, I guess, when we're talking about 20 years ago, back when they were bottoming out and we're looking at 30 wins and a triangle offense. It's a little better, but there is still no urgency.
30 wins in a triangle offense. That is not a sales pitch or a marketing slogan that I think is going to work in today's NBA. Mark, I do want to ask you, since you are a salary cap expert, we've talked to you a lot about the evolution of the league, even over the last few years that you've been on the Midday Show. Given what you've seen in the past, like 48 hours, how do you think, what team do you think has really stood out to you as far as maneuvering well in this new CBA with the aprons and the luxury taxes and just trying to get a competitive team together?
Earlier on, I said about the Denver Nuggets, and I would stand by that one, especially considering that they've seemingly now acquired Jonas Valanciunas, a quality backup center for only Dario Saric, who wasn't in the rotation anyway. They've added at a time when they could have cut. Now, they had to trade their 2032 first in order to do so, to free up that very concrete that I was describing. That will hurt them in 7 years' time. Let's worry about that in 7 years' time, because in 7 years' time, Nikola Jokic will be 37. We'll worry about that then. For now, they've been able to reopen a competitiveness window that was looking lost when they fired their head coach with 3 games to go in the past season. Them for one. Secondly, Atlanta Hawks. They are doing well. They've had a personnel change in the front office, and it is evident. They were able to not only win the bidding war for Nikhil Alexander Walker. When did the Hawks last win a bidding war? They also were able to take on Kristaps Porzingis by taking advantage of Boston's need to cut salary. They fleeced the Pelicans for an extra unprotected first-round pick next season by trading down a mere 5 spots. I'm seeing some dancing there, Marshall, and it is justified. It is absolutely justified.
That could have been the Bulls.
It could have been the Bulls. It should have been the Bulls. But it wasn't. We can only work with what we know. But because the Hawks are now taking advantage of the very situations in which they used to be the ones getting taken advantage of, they have become trendsetters. They have become pioneers. They now have Luke Kennard, who will be an 8-figure expiring contract. They have that pick that they can go with it. They've still got some trade exception money left over. They have growth potential from Zachary Rhys-Eshay, a Kongwu from Dyson Daniels, breakout defensive star. And, of course, they've got the actual superstar in Trae Young.
I don't know if Trae Young's a superstar because that man's inefficient. I do not like his game. But I understand everything else you said. I agree with everything else you said.
We talked a lot about the Hawks in our pre-show meeting, actually.
Yeah.
There you go.
I appreciate you, Mark. Thanks so much. I mean, this has been... I don't know what to... It's been a very good visit from you across the pond.
I know. It's great to hear from you, Mark. You've always been a great, appreciated guest on the show. If you want to hear more from Mark, you can check his work out at heavy.com and hoopshype.com. He's also on Twitter at MarkDeeksNBA. Thanks again for joining us, Mark. And the fact that we got a dreadful in from you is just perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. If you want me to record your voicemail inbox messages or something, just let me know.
I think we actually would. Yeah, I would be all for that. We'll come up with something creative. We'll get on this for sure. Our man across the pond, Mark Deeks. It is a great accent. On Raheemy and Harris on The Score.